All right, welcome to the show, Chris Graham and Josh Deal. We're going to talk wrestling here, and welcome to Augusta Free Press on Facebook, and also for those listening to our podcast archive of this. And we're going to talk about, well, among other things, we're going to do a few days later recap of WrestleMania 36, kind of get our impressions and share those with you out there. And of course, so Josh, first thing, welcome to the show, first off.
Hey, thanks for having me, man.
Appreciate it. Be a lot of fun, you know, two guys talking wrestling here. And so, well, first off, I want to just get your impressions. You know, we've had a few days to digest this now. WrestleMania 36 in the can.
Two-night
event. And, you know, there were some good matches on the show, no question. And I'm kind of happy that it was two nights. I also like the one-day event. But, man, when it starts at, like, 4 o'clock and goes all the way to midnight, that's a long day.
Huge day.
So, now, without the crowd, how did you feel it got over in terms of, because it's so difficult, wrestling is a live event and they feed off the crowd so much. How do you feel it came across without a crowd there?
It was odd, and wrestling right now is odd because it's so crowd based, and these guys and gals, or if they choose a gender, are, you know, they're playing to the crowd. They're doing things specifically for a reaction, for noise. Sometimes that's a good thing, sometimes it's not. And in general, over this period that we're in, I feel like it's actually improved the in-ring product a lot. I think a lot of these guys, they've been trained to draw something out of the crowd, which you should. I mean, you're trying to sell a product, but I think in the post WCW world, and we've gotten to the point, especially with WWE, it's so polished, they're just playing to the crowd maybe too much sometimes. I'm annoyed by some of the wrestlers that do that. Now, with that said, we're talking about WrestleMania. I kind of went on a tangent really early in this, but I liked it. I thought it was really fun. The times that we're in, it's reflective of that. We will never have another WrestleMania like that. Hopefully, God willing, we'll never have this kind of a WrestleMania again. But I thought it was really good. I thought that the matches were crisp. I thought that the wrestlers paid attention to each other really, really well. It was more about driving the story other than the pops, and if you're doing your job in wrestling, you're going to get the pops, right? But I really liked it. I thought it was odd, but it was also, it kind of felt like a labor of love in a lot of ways. So I'm not really going to go out of my way and criticize this WrestleMania because, I mean, they gave us something. They gave us something in the middle of nothing, right? You know? But I loved it. I mean, the movie matches, as I call them, were fantastic. Just unbelievable. What Taker and AJ did, it wasn't really great wrestling, but man, it was so enthralling. It felt like a 1980s action movie climax, right? Where you got the bad guy, he's waiting for the good guy, you know, he's got his wife or somebody tied up somewhere, and like, you know, they fight it out in like some dark, dingy sort of location. And it made no pretense about what it was either. Like, they weren't trying to say, hey, this is a real fight, guys. No, man, they're just telling a story and making a movie. And the Bray Wyatt John Cena thing was just, I watched it. I was like, whoa, what just happened? I stopped it, rewound it immediately just to be like, what? Because there's so much content, so many references. And trying to see, like, think about where they're maybe going in the future with Bray Wyatt's character, maybe where they're going in the future with John Cena's character, those kinds of things. So as far as like, WrestleMania as a whole, I loved it. I thought it was really fun. Match for match, I thought it was a really good WrestleMania. Of course, like, WrestleMania has gotten in the habit, in my opinion, of the main events just not being that great. And this year was no different, but we also got different champions going forward. We have young blood, new champions, first time WWE champions crowned. I can't remember Eddie Guerrero and Benoit that year, they both won the titles, you know. So that was, it's kind of, what reminds me of almost like a changing of the guard feel to it. Hopefully it is. Hopefully it's not just like, we're just going to do this for now and then we'll go back to somehow putting the belt on Goldberg again.
Yeah, I was going to ask you before we go into the more into the WrestleMania side of things.
Yeah,
man. For our viewers out there, listeners on the podcast, you're based in Georgia, Athens, Georgia. So I will ask you, have you either watched or maybe even, I don't know, been to a taping for the NWA Power Studio show? Have you seen that?
Almost did, and the shutdown happened. Okay. I was supposed to go in March.
Have those on YouTube? Any of the shows on
yes.
YouTube?
Okay. Yes, I love that product. It's so fun. It's purposely old school, right? But the characters are so enthralling, and you get to see so much more of their personality and the comedy side of wrestling, which it's a real thing. And I wish that was a bigger part of what WWE does, because I think so many of those people that are involved, they have these amazing personalities in real life. If you follow them on, like Adam Scher, who's Braun Strowman on, you know, Universal Champion right now. If you follow him on Instagram, he's hilarious. And he's just a big redneck that likes big guns and telling stupid jokes. So he's in that. Yeah. So I kind of wish that where WWE would do that. So NWA Power, I enjoy quite a lot. Yeah.
And the reason I bring that up then is because right now NWA Power is filmed in a public TV studio. I've done a TV show in a public TV studio. I hosted a news affair for a couple of years with my wife. Those studios aren't that big. I mean, you can look at the studio. It's actually decent size for what it needs to be. But
They cut it off too. They don't use the whole studio for the show either. They make it look as they try to keep the original size of the original NWA. World Championship Wrestling show back when it was just a show.
And I love those shows. I mean, I'll watch on YouTube. I'll watch some of those old WCW Saturday night shows, the 605 squash match shows, the Memphis shows, the Mid-South shows from the 80s.
Yeah.
In the studio, those kind of shows. And so, and the reason I bring that up in the context of WrestleMania is it feels like, you know, WWE could have, I don't know if maybe they try to learn, you know, when you're at WrestleMania or a Raw, and you're in front of either at a Raw in front of 12,000 people in a live venue or WrestleMania 70,000 people, obviously you've got to project so far out. In a studio match, you can't project that far out. And it felt like to me the first few Raws and SmackDowns and NXTs of this era, the current era we're in, the temporary era, better be that we're in, the guys and gals were still trying to project to a much bigger venue.
Well, it's harder to break habits, man. Like that's what they do. That's what they're supposed
to do. And that's what, and not only they are trained to do, but also the directors, they're being told, hey, project out. It felt like to me that for WrestleMania, they dialed that back. You know, they didn't. Mm-hmm. Rob Gronkowski, when he was first introduced as the host of WrestleMania on one of those weekly shows, comes out gesticulating all this stuff. And it felt like they'd learned their lesson. They kind of learned. And maybe they learned a little bit from AEW as well. I think AEW's done a pretty good job of using what they have at their disposal to put shows on. They've done a decent job. I love the way the staging was at WrestleMania in terms of, you know, they used the lights, they used the big screen behind the camera side, you know, shooting across there pretty well. And so they corrected for what they needed to correct for. My favorite match of the weekend, and I guess I had two, one each night, my favorite two matches, the live matches, live tape matches. Saturday night, it was probably the Seth Rollins, Kevin Owens match. And Sunday, it was Charlotte Flair and Rhea Ripley.
Really? So what'd you like about that match? That one's a curious one to me. Rhea Ripley. Rhea versus Charlotte. What did you like about it? What drew you in about that particular match?
It felt like one. I mean, the first night watching WrestleMania, I was conscious of the fact that I was watching a wrestling show with no fans. For the Charlotte Rhea Ripley match, I forgot that there were no fans. At some point, I forgot there were no fans. Also,
loud. They screamed the whole time.
and it was a back and forth. There were a couple false finishes, which I love in a match. It was well booked. The pacing and the booking felt like a New Japan style match where, man, you know, you think you're going to have an ending and then the match goes on for another 10 minutes. You have a couple more false finishes each way. Now I really don't know who's going to win. I mean, that's good. When you suspend disbelief and people like me or people like you, And at some point, you just don't know what's going to. Now, we knew Charlotte was going to win. She wasn't going to challenge. She wasn't going to use the Royal Rumble challenge and then not win the NXT title.
Well, yeah, I mean, that was – well, you know what? Some people were kind of mad about the fact that she won, actually. I think that when I watched it, when my impression – I've only watched the match once.
Yeah,
so I really thought it was – Rhea Ripley, they booked her to look tough, right? Look strong. She got injured, you know, and I think in a normal, you know, if it was a Monday, if there was a match on Monday Night Raw without the build that they put up, you know, they probably would have done the, you know, the false, like she's injured kind of thing. Yeah. But they made it look like Charlotte really is the ring general. She is the best of the best in women's wrestling. And she, by the end of it, it was like she was just playing with Rhea, you know, like drawing it out, just like a line, just be like, okay, I could finish this, but I'm going to keep on going. So she was sinking her teeth into. So I'm wondering with that if they're going to try to make her go full heel after Mania, try to make her as mean of a champion as possible. Maybe I don't know. That's just kind of where my impression of it, and trying to think, because like any match you have, the idea is, especially on a WrestleMania match, it's not in a vacuum, right? Unless it's when Zack Ryder won the Intercontinental Championship and they took it off of him
last night, which made no sense. Yeah, yeah.
Do what?
And then he won the championship, and then if I remember right, lost the next night. I
mean, it was immediately
elevation, and here he's already gone. Yeah.
He's gone, and the fans loved it. It was like one of the. It was like honestly to this day, Ryder winning the IC Championship at Mania was one of my favorite WrestleMania moments, and they just took it straight away from him. I think they could have done something with him, so I don't know why they don't think he can carry a championship or be some sort of, you know, sellable commodity. But yeah, I thought it was a really good match. It was a brutal match. It was a lot harder hitting match, the Rhea Ripley versus Charlotte match, than I thought it was going to be, because Charlotte really doesn't – she usually doesn't work that stiff. And it's usually more of a, you know, finesse and show off. And I mean, she changed her style. She turned into a brawler and just like, you know, they looked like she was really trying to hurt Rhea, which it's not typically what, you know, a Charlotte Flair match feels like. Anyway.
I actually said out loud a couple of times. I watched the show with my wife and I said out loud a couple of times. My wife doesn't have the background as a wrestling fan that I do longevity wise. But I said, wow, this reminds me of Ric Flair. But not Ric Flair 90s or 2000s version. That the way Charlotte was performing, the way she was carrying herself in that match, it reminded me of vintage mid to late 80s Ric Flair. She had that arrogance about her.
Mm-hmm. Trying to hurt Dusty Rhodes.
Yeah, yeah. The slow pace, the confident, oozing, you know, the I'm going to beat you and I'm not going to just beat you. I'm going to make you look bad kind of confidence.
Yeah.
We've seen the glimpses of that, but that's where the you know, of all the matches on this card, this is the one I wish had been in front of a big crowd, because
it would have been massive. It would have been.
It would have been, yeah, yeah. It would have been.
Here's my prediction about WrestleMania. We're gonna get a lot of repeats as soon as there's a live crowd for a pay per view. We're gonna get Rhea Ripley versus Charlotte Flair again, and I wouldn't be surprised if the belt switched hands a few times. Just kind of like to pop NXT on Wednesday nights a few times too. I think they need that. And I think that's part of why they put the belt on Charlotte, was to try and help NXT with their, you know, live TV draw, because they need it. They need it bad. I mean, like AEW is like, you know, AEW can do anything they want. People are still watching, and NXT they kind of have to. They're putting pay per view matches on just to spark a little bit of viewership. You know, that three way dance for the North American title the other week, and then you got Gargano and Ciampa going at it, you know. Then, but yeah, I love that feud, by the way. I wish that would have been at WrestleMania.
Oh, that's my a friend of mine started a Facebook thread the other day, you know, his favorite feuds, and he didn't include Gargano Ciampa, and I said, oh, no list is complete without Gargano Ciampa. I go back and watch those matches. I fast forward through the rest of them and just watch the end of those shows, especially – what was it? I guess it would have been a last man standing match. The clever ending to that match I literally, when I watched it that night, screamed out loud when Ciampa was handcuffed Gargano handcuffed Ciampa, if I can remember right, and still lost.
He still lost.
I screamed out loud. And again, you know, we can be jaded wrestling fans. Mm-hmm. We know how it's all done, everything else. When they get you to make you forget that it's
feel something.
And make you scream out loud, they have achieved something there.
Yeah. Those two guys, I mean, they're fantastic in-ring storytellers. It's not so much – and that's another thing that matters to me is if I can watch a match and know who the heel and the face is and have – and there's some sort of drama inside the ropes versus, you know, the promos that have built up to it and, like, a couple weeks of TV. Well, that stuff is important, but that's why I'm really enjoying this phase of wrestling right now is because all they've got is the in-ring stuff. I mean, they can do some promos. They can do some things, but they're so limited with the time that they have to connect with the fans anymore. You know, they're trying to tape all these shows in really tight windows. But yeah, the in-ring performances have been much, much better, from my opinion. Anyway, or maybe I'm just looking at it in a different light, but I think it's more solid. I think the wrestlers are focusing on the other wrestlers, and they're not trying to have this Carnival Barker thing that try to like elicit like a fake reaction, you know, like, come on, clap your hands and like try to get like this little, okay, from the crowd. But no, man, like just wrestle, do the thing in the ring.
I was going to – so when you mentioned something when you were talking about the Charlotte Ripley match, I thought I would bring up you talked about how they were so vocal with each other. They were so very clearly talking trash at each other through the match. And you could in every match you could hear talking between the performers. The referee, of course, the instructions were always – you always see the referees talking during a show, but, of course, the crowd noise and everything else drowns it out. I noticed that. I also noticed – I think the casual fan who maybe doesn't have an appreciation for just what a bump must feel like.
Oh.
Now they have to have an appreciation because that's all you can hear is the bumps. I think fans actually might think, I mean, I'll actually talk to people from time to time. They know that I worked in the business as a promoter and writer and backstage guy. And they'll say, oh yeah, well, of course it's all padded and it's all this and the other. It's probably a trampoline. And I'll say, no. It's steel beams with wood plank on top of it. It's hard. It hurts.
Yeah, you can build a house on a ring.
And now, now I think after watching the, you know, 6 hours or whatever it was of wrestling this past weekend, fans really know, boy, that sounds like it hurts. And guess what? It does.
It does.
And I want to give credit in one area to the performers too. One thing I was paying attention to, I was expecting that we would hear shots being called. Because there's no crowd noise to balance it out. I think one time I saw, and I can't think of which match it was now, I kind of saw somebody talking, and that may have even been the Edge Randy Orton match now that I think
it was. Yeah, they did talk a lot. I think Edge is a little, I mean, of course he's a little rusty, and he wasn't putting his head in the right position. He wasn't putting his back to the camera a couple times when he was talking. But yeah, they did a great job covering up all that stuff. I understand they had more time for post-production too, but it looked so solid, so it flowed, so incredibly well.
I was afraid they would give away the business a little bit if our trained ears or untrained ears would hear some things. And so the other match that I highlighted there was the from Saturday night, Rollins and Owens, and those are of course mm-hmm. are great performers. No matter you could stick them anywhere, and they would put a great match on. But the other moment that I'm wishful that we could have had as a WrestleMania moment was when Kevin Owens climbs at the top of the set. And once again, I'm screaming at the TV, don't do, oh my God, what are you doing? And he does it. that match and then that moment, those really highlights for me for the weekend.
Owens and Rollins. I mean, like, I was talking to some friends the other day. I'm like, man, like these two guys, they've been stalwarts of the wrestling business for a lot longer than people know, and they've had matches, you know, a decade ago that people just don't know about, so they're very familiar with each other. I think it was a really good choice to put these guys on the card to have that, you know, that scientific, that brutal, you know, the guys that have so much chemistry together, that can put on the matches and are willing to do what you're talking about, go for the big spots, you know, and risk that injury and just give somebody, you know, as close as you can to like a Hell in the Cell moment mm-hmm. as you can in that in that setting. Yeah, I'm looking over the matches right now, trying to jog my memory about a couple of things. Sami Zayn, Daniel Bryan, I really enjoyed that one. Those two guys, of course, is another Ring of Honor versus Ring of Honor match. I'm really coming around to Zayn. I thought he had lost some of his mojo. He was kind of flat there for a while, but now he's come back and they put the championship on him kind of out of nowhere. And he's doing a great job with it. He's doing a really good job. And Daniel Bryan has fallen back into his face persona really, really well. That match I thought was phenomenal. You had the outside interference. You had all the drama of that. You brought in all that kind of stuff. But, you know, I was looking down the card and sorry, one second. Let me put the names on it. Oh yeah, Black versus Lashley. That one really surprised me. Those two guys, Lashley kind of gets crapped on a lot. People just don't think that he's all that great in the ring, or he's, for some reason, that he kind of gets lumped in with like the Lesnars and the John Cenas, and people just not really respecting him, I feel, as a professional wrestler and what he can do in the ring. But man, that was a solid match, really solid match, hard hitting. And the finish was really good, building towards the future with potential split up between Lana and Lashley. I really enjoyed that. And Aleister Black just happens to be one of my absolute favorites right now. He's a interesting cat with his Undertaker-ish sort of a thing he's got going on. But yeah, Lashley and Black was a standout. I love the finish to Otis and Ziggler. Oh, that was really fun. That whole story, it's kind of a gaga, kind of a cheap laugh kind of a thing, but it gave like a moment. It gave like this emotional, relational payoff to Otis. He finally, the good guy got the girl at the end. The good guy won. The good guy, he's literally walking off with the girl in his arms. So I thought that was a nice touch to the night as well. Sorry.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, you know, I was going to jump off a point you made a little earlier about we may see some of these matches again when we get live crowds and whenever that is in the next month, 2 months, whenever it might be. I'm thinking that SummerSlam this year, I mean, SummerSlam gets a big blowout anyway because it's the mid-year WrestleMania. It's treated differently than every other pay-per-view, but maybe Royal Rumble, maybe Survivor Series. But SummerSlam is definitely number two on the year's card. I'm feeling like, to me, SummerSlam this year might be the unofficial WrestleMania of 2020.
Oh, yeah.
And as a result, I mean, you were mentioning the two top belts, the Universal and the WWE. You know, Roman Reigns seemed like it was pretty clear he was being booked to be the Universal guy. And then that's why Goldberg's even in the equation in the first place. And then, of course, the issues happen. And understandably, Roman Reigns needs to back off because of his potential exposure. Being a recent leukemia survivor, second time survivor.
Yeah.
But it feels like to me, Braun Strowman, what a perfect opportunity to give him the belt for a few months. And then it wouldn't surprise me if we see a Braun Strowman, Roman Reigns feud building up to SummerSlam. And Drew McIntyre, I don't think he's an interstitial guy. I think that perhaps Strowman's going to hold the belt just to hand it to Roman Reigns, maybe at SummerSlam. Maybe they'll wait till next WrestleMania. Who knows? But
yeah, sure.
McIntyre feels like to me, I mean, that was, it felt like to me where things were going to go, no matter how big the crowd was or not like the crowd was. And I'm just curious now where things kind of go for him from here and who, you know, ends up being his dance partner for the next few months, and especially the longer term plans for him.
Well, yeah, he's got the belt for Raw. The WWE's on Raw, right? Yeah,
I've lost track of where they are too. So yeah.
Place, pretty sure it is. You know what, man? He is the kind of guy. He's so believable as a champion. He can cut the promos. He can work with so many different people. Whereas I feel like Strowman is great. Like I saw, I like Strowman a lot, and I think his real personality is way more interesting to me than his in-ring personality. I would not be surprised with Strowman if we get him and Bray going into SummerSlam. I think that's the money. I think that's the money matchup for SummerSlam. It's with Bray, they've gone back and he's beaten, you know, Rollins, and he's beat up Daniel Bryan, and now he's taken out Cena, and and these characters, everybody he's gone over on, they've reverted to older gimmicks or who they used to be, kind of a thing. So does Braun Strowman break that curse? Is Braun Strowman strong? Are they going to book him to be strong enough to do that, to carry that and do what other people couldn't do? I don't know. Or could it be a series? Could they go back to having series of matches between, you know, people changing belts, that kind of a thing? But if you're asking me, if I'm making that creative decision, it's Bray versus Strowman at SummerSlam, if we have crowds and all that stuff, if we're going to do it again. To me, that's the one you really go for.
And then, and McMahon likes to save Roman Reigns for big things like WrestleMania's anyway. So if that's the case, I think that makes a lot of sense. And also,
I also say that because I don't know if things are going to be clear enough with this virus by the time that we get to SummerSlam in August for Roman Reigns to come back, because I think it's going to be on its way down by then, hopefully. Thank God, hopefully. But at that time, it still might be a little bit risky for a guy that's gone a couple of bouts with leukemia to be in a ring and be in a building with all those people.
Well, and then even if he is, I think the point you're making about the next logical partner, plus the thinking that McMahon loves to book towards WrestleMania again, and plus when you put a belt on a guy like Strowman, the challenge of that is he's a monster, and so how do you beat the monster? And you can't beat the monster straight up unless there's another monster, and Bray Wyatt fits that bill, certainly. So that would actually be a very believable next stepping off point for Braun Strowman to pull towards, I think.
I didn't exactly enjoy the Strowman booking to take the belt right now. I just don't feel like he's ready for it. That's just my personal opinion. He struggles with storytelling, and he is just this big guy that gets out there and puts his hands up. It's entertaining. It's fine. I get why people are drawn to that particular character. The character side, it just doesn't do a whole lot for me. And how do you book a guy like that? I mean, we've seen Lesnar go down now, but it took a really long time, and it took a guy that was bigger than Lesnar to actually pull it off. You don't have that option with Braun Strowman. Anybody he gets in the ring with, just eyeball test, you're like, they're getting their ass kicked. But that's just the way it goes with him. So I would be surprised, if he holds the belt solid until SummerSlam. He's going to have to learn on his feet. It's kind of going back to the days back when they were putting the belt on guys, the World Heavyweight Championship, the big gold belt on Jack Swagger and people like that, that were not ready for it. They were good in the ring, but they needed that belt. They were using the World Heavyweight Championship as a way to progress people and kind of build them up. Like Rey Mysterio, one of my favorite all-time wrestlers, should not have been World Heavyweight Champion. Just didn't fit the bill. And they just didn't book him well at all in that role. And they put the World Heavyweight Championship on CM Punk way too early. And it hurt him. Him being champion so early was a bad deal for him. But I don't know. We'll see. I mean, it's a really protected environment for Strowman right now, and he can hold the belt without defending it for months now. That's just the way it goes.
Well, that's right. That is, and and plus then it's on his resume, it's something you can come back to later and point out when you need to do so for another big sell for a match. So we were going to talk, Josh, and I've taken up a lot of your time, and this has been fun.
No, I enjoy it, man. I'm good to go.
Well, I want to say we've done a whole discussion of WrestleMania. Let's come back next week and talk some AEW. You want to maybe do a whole AEW show?
I would love
to. I need to do, because I'm afraid if I start talking AEW and you and I start talking AEW, we might be here all evening.
All night.
Let's break away for now. And for our viewers and listeners, for our viewers both on Facebook and then our listeners – who are joining, because I'm going to make a podcast out of this as well. Mm-hmm. You've got questions for us for next week's show. Either comment here on the Facebook. You can comment on our website. There's also on the Podbean app where our podcast is there. Just throw a question out there. I monitor all these things. I'll collect these for next week. And then we'll, you know, in addition to talking in-depth AEW, we'll also talk just what our kind of our viewers and listeners want to talk about. So so let's do that. And so, Josh, any last thoughts as we're wrapping up WrestleMania here? Any last thoughts about WM36 as we kind of move off into the sunset for the week?
You know, it's still one of those things that it just feels like it's kind of floggy. Be honest with you, man. I'm trying to focus on it right now. I haven't really dissected it too much. We've talked about it a lot tonight, and I think about the business in broad stroke terms. So just sitting down and thinking about a particular event sometimes, especially right now, it's a little hard to focus on the thing. But, you know, the main thing I've walked away from WrestleMania 36 was appreciation. They did it. They gave us something to watch, be interested in, something new, and just break up everything else that's going on right now. And the two-night thing, I think, may roll over. I think that we might actually get a true WrestleMania week from the WWE, not just, you know, you got to go to the town they're going to. I think that we might have a four-night event when you consider Hall of Fame, the NXT show, and then two nights of Mania. I think that will be, if I had any inclination of what we're going to see next year, that's what I want to see. And I think they're looking at it. People will really enjoy it. I think that's one of the things that they've got a lot of really positive feedback about with WrestleMania 36. What about you, man?
I'm hoping the same thing. You know, Wrestle Kingdom this year, the New Japan show went two nights, and it took a while to watch because they went two nights of 5 hours each. They didn't narrow things down just because they expanded for two nights. I've read that WWE had been thinking about going two nights for this year anyway, and then backed off. And then now they had to do it for the different reasons. And so now they've seen this. They know that they had our attention for two nights, and they've seen New Japan have success with this. Certainly, I hope for the future, and I like the plan you laid out there. Maybe the Thursday night is your Hall of Fame, Friday is NXT's takeover, and then two-night WrestleMania. You know, the town that the city that gets WrestleMania anyway, all the indies show up, ROH shows up, New Japan shows up, everybody shows up and does their own show. It only makes sense for WWE to try to have the weekend for itself.
Yeah, the weekend, the whole week, and then you've got this. Now they're entering deals with Fox Sports, FS1, and ESPN. There's been a whole lot of talk about ESPN buying into WrestleMania and WWE pay per views in general. We'll see how that goes into the fall. I don't think ESPN is going to try and throw a wet blanket on college football in any way, but you know, getting too much wrestling content on their platforms. But in the spring, dude, wrestling is it. I mean, you've got the Masters, and then after March Madness, I mean, it's a dead period. You need something, and they could soak it up and make it big. And I think we will see WrestleMania week. You'll see stuff on network TV next year. I think you'll see, or at least partnerships with Fox and ESPN and some of this content, that kind of thing. But yeah, man. I think this year was a really good effort. They took their time in making the movies, which nobody had seen that level of production in WWE. I think since like when they were doing the vignettes in like the 90s and 80s, when you were bringing in Taker and you were doing like the Ultimate Warrior stuff and all those weird things. And they follow. And then like back in the 80s when Dusty Rhodes and Magnum TA, they would like go to somebody's like ranch or something like that. Or, you know, in the Four Horsemen, that one time they followed Dusty to his gym and like broke his arm or something like that. So they were making a movie. They were making something that was obviously staged, obviously just not real, but still it was some of the most entertaining stuff I've seen out of pro wrestling in a very long time.
I hope we see more of that next year too, and other shows too. I'm with you on that. We've seen some success with that. One of my friends who's a wrestling fan like we are said that he wonders if the fingerprints of Jerry Borash may have been on at least the Undertaker AJ Styles segment.
I think Pritchard. That felt like Pritchard because Pritchard did a lot of the Taker vignettes and stuff like that back when they were getting him going and trying to build that Mystique dead guy character back in the early 90s. And then like the Cena Bray thing, to me, it felt like Vince McMahon let his hands off of it and just said, okay, make something. Mm-hmm. What you got? And that's ballsy. That's Vince McMahon history. You know, like when you expect him to do something canned, he doesn't. You know, he goes all out, or he lets something go all out. The pace of it, the jabs, the references, it probably pissed off a lot of people in the wrestling business when they talked about it. You know, the projections of Hulk Hogan and Eric Bischoff that they did, and bring it. You know, yeah, to me that felt like Bray. I was impressed that Cena went through with that because it made him look like a fool. Like, I'm a Cena fan. Like, I know a lot of people that that's not something you say typically, but like, I think he's a good wrestler. I think he's one of the best talkers in the history. He's developed into it. His early stuff was just atrocious, but like, once he dropped the Thugonomics thing, I think he became one of the best of all time, and he's been one of the biggest draws of all time. And for him you have to imagine this would be like Hulk Hogan going into that situation, right? Or like Hulk Hogan going into like an Ultimate Warrior dream and getting his soul crushed. I don't know, something weird like that. But
I will agree with you on Cena. I don't know that I appreciated Cena when he was a full time guy, and now that he's not a full time guy and you see him once or twice or three times a year, I think you appreciate him for what he was. And
he's just that much better than everybody else around him.
Yeah,
he
yeah,
really is. There's few people on the roster right now that can talk like he can, that can work like he can, that can put on matches with so many different kinds of wrestlers and put them over. And still, he'll win, but he'll still put them over sometimes. Like the Rusev at WrestleMania. I thought that was one of my favorite WrestleMania matches, him and Rusev. And Rusev lost, but He put him over. Rusev looked really good in that situation. He put over Daniel Bryan, CM Punk. He helped build up CM Punk. I don't think CM Punk would be, you know, this almost like mythical creature that he's kind of turned into if it wasn't for John Cena, you know, putting him over and working with him as well as he did.
And Suplex City doesn't exist if he doesn't take 20 Germans in that match with Brock Lesnar. And for a guy who didn't need to be put over, that match – just like the WrestleMania match, he talked about how he made a fool of himself, allowed himself to be made a fool of in that match for the greater entertainment of everyone else. That Brock Lesnar match, he let himself be ragdolled for 20 minutes to really sell monster Brock Lesnar to an audience that maybe needed to be convinced that Brock Lesnar was that. So two more memorable matches of John Cena where he just totally let himself be squashed, essentially. For a guy like that to be able to do that, that says a lot about Cena.
Yeah, he's great. I think, you know, unlike Hogan, you know, you can – the one thing about Hogan that was so good is that, you know, he could put on a promo and he could get people excited just by talking, right? But his matches were terrible. The man never had a great match. Like, he had some big moments. You know, I think his best all-around match that I ever saw of him – was versus the Rocket Mania. That was probably his best work. His matches with Flair were terrible. His matches with Vader were terrible because he didn't want to get hurt. Even the match with Sting was just trash. Like the big one, you know, like, and he's
better on paper than they ever were in the ring.
Yeah. But the man could sell. But you know what? People don't talk about how crappy of a wrestler he is in general. You know, it's Hulk Hogan. He's this mythical character. Anyway, man.
Well, this has been fun. This is our first show for us to do here. And so for our viewers out there, thank you for joining us. And we'll be back next week with Josh. And we'll talk some AEW in depth. I want to thank everybody again and have a great day, everyone.